Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who?
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Who Wars. This is the podcast for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. It's also our first for 2015. It's episode 21, and I'm your host, Rob Irwin. How are you all? This is the first time I've had a chance to talk to you all, well, with my voice at least, since the new year began. I hope you've had a good start to it. When I look back on that Christmas New Year break, it went so, so fast. It's unbelievable. And a good case in point is you'll remember in several episodes of Who Wars, I had mentioned I'd like to watch the Clone Wars, the Star Wars Clone Wars TV series during the break, primarily because I'd watched the first couple of series and it was so incredibly childish and kiddie, and, you know, I know it is made for children, don't get me wrong, but it was just a bit too silly for me. You had this Ahsoka Tano running around calling, you know, Anakin Skywalker Sky Guy, and it was just ridiculous to me. I know it has a lot of fans, and what I do know too is a lot of those fans will particularly say to me, oh, okay, yes, that was a bit kiddie, but when you watch, you know, series 4 and beyond, it's more adult, it's a bit more gritty, it's a bit more dark, well, at least as dark as a children's television program can be. And so I've always meant to watch those episodes, but with a view to actually watching them in order as they were transmitted, or possibly chronological order, which was a suggestion from our team member here, Kate. But you know what? I didn't get around to that. I'd been promising to do it. I didn't even buy a Blu-ray or a DVD disc to kick off watching it. So I didn't even get to the shop, let alone sit down and actually enjoy the series. It's something I still want to do. I really, really do want to do it. But for the moment, it seems to be off the agenda because that Christmas New Year's break, even being off work, it just went so incredibly fast. I mean, for those in the Northern Hemisphere, do appreciate that it is summer down here, so around our Christmas break, we tend to get out more and do more things, I guess, than people who might be a bit snowbound in their houses in the Northern Hemisphere. So it's a whole different kind of world in some ways. And yeah, it just meant I didn't get as much done as I wanted to. But, you know, that's okay. I did some other cool stuff, and I'm pretty happy with my break. I hope you had a good break too. All right, what's up in this episode? Well, we'll have our usual stories of the week, or it should be stories of the fortnight, as the show is fortnightly at present. And do you know, I think the show will continue in a fortnightly format, at least until Doctor Who returns later in the year, and then we might go into weekly shows so we can be reviewing the episodes week after week. But for now, I think fortnightly is good, and we'll have our fortnightly news. We do have a competition in this episode. We're also going to run it in the next episode as well, so you will have time to get entries in. And that's with the AM audio people. Now, Doctor Who fans will know these people as the folks behind the Doctor Who Dark Journey series, and they've put together three awesome prize packs for us to give away. The first time we've ever had a competition on the show. We'll run it via Twitter, and I hope you can submit something, because it's a pretty easy competition to get involved with. It's a fun competition to get involved with, and there are some really good prizes. Okay, aside from that, the website, whowars.net, I've mentioned in the past we were updating it and putting some more interesting information there. It has a team page now, so if you'd like to go there and see pictures of myself and Leo and Kate and Lex and the Rev, and read little bios about us, that's all up there. There's also a page about joining the team, whether as an irregular contributor or as a more regular contributor. We'd love to have more people on the team, either regularly or irregularly, because Who Wars, as I've often said, is a grassroots program by fans for fans, and we never lose sight of where we came from, and the door is open to good and talented fans out there to contribute stuff to us and make this show even better. Also, one last piece of housekeeping before we get on with the stories of the week, and that's with regard to Star Wars Rebels. They put out an episode on January 5th called Path of the Jedi, but the next episode, called Idiot's Array, isn't out until January 19th. So, with that Idiot's Array out on January 19th, I think we have an episode coming up maybe a week or so after that where we can put those two episodes together. So if you're sitting there thinking, gosh, there was an episode of Rebels out on January 5th and it's not being reviewed in this episode and here we are so far beyond January 5th, what's happening? Are you not reviewing it? No, rest assured we are still doing Star Wars Rebels reviews, but I think we're going to do them as double episodes every now and then, depending on their schedule. I mean, putting out an episode on January 5th and then one on January 19th, I'm not sure what's up with that. They had a break over Christmas. It seems Star Wars Rebels comes out whenever it likes to come out, so we'll play along with that, and you'll hear more about Star Wars Rebels on the show when we have more ourselves. All right, then. Without any further ado, let's get on to the stories of the week. All right, into the stories of the week, and we'll kick off with some Star Wars. Liam Neeson, who, as you all know, played Qui-Gon Jinn in The Phantom Menace, has given some thoughts about the new-look lightsaber that we saw in the Episode 7 teaser trailer. Now, that's the lightsaber that ignites, and it's got a slightly different effect on it to regular lightsabers. It looks more fiery. It looks more sort of out of control, chaotic. And then, if that wasn't enough, a little crossguard comes out from the lightsaber as well. You've all seen it. You know exactly what I'm talking about it. Liam Neeson's commented on this lightsaber saying, "I had a couple of worries about that lightsaber. I thought if it comes in," and he means in towards your body, "and close to you, it's like having a jet of burning fluid hitting your clothes and skin. But I'm sure they've thought that out." And that's quite true, because the article is illustrated with a picture of Qui-Gon Jinn holding his lightsaber up fairly close to his face, and it makes you realize if you were holding that new lightsaber in that same sort of position, you might have the crossguard burning your cheek. So, good observation there from Liam. I guess it does mean that this Star Wars villain will fight with the lightsaber in a different way. I guess they'll fight in a more medieval knight kind of way, perhaps more so than in a sort of a samurai katana kind of way, which is, I guess, how the regular lightsabers were wielded in the prequels, at least in the original trilogy. That was just Mark Hamill slashing around like he was chopping down a tree, and poor old Dave Prowse just sort of swinging and, you know, probably not even seeing where his blade was going half the time. I don't think we can really take the original trilogy to be good examples of lightsaber wielding, but in the prequels, yes, it was very Japanese. It was very samurai, as I say. During these comments that Neeson made, which was to Yahoo Movies, I was remiss in mentioning that, he also said he'd love to return to Star Wars, though he's not sure how that would be possible since his character is dead. And he said, "I don't know how he would return unless you went back in time or he becomes a hologram or something. He's a Jedi, anything could happen. It's Star Wars world." Now, it's a bit disappointing to hear Liam say that, not only saying it's Star Wars world, which doesn't seem to make much sense at all, but from the point of view that Liam has recorded audio in the past relating to Qui-Gon Jinn having mastered the Force and being able to pass on into the Force. I'm probably not explaining this very well for non-Star Wars fans, but if you think of how Yoda and Obi-Wan Kenobi in the original trilogy became one with the Force and then could appear as like blue glowing spirits, well, what they were building into Star Wars, that all of that sort of came from Qui-Gon Jinn, well, at least in terms of Yoda and Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon had passed on the knowledge of how to do that to Yoda, and then he would pass it on to Obi-Wan, I believe. And Liam Neeson should know this, because he's recorded audio about it, so he should know that Qui-Gon could return potentially as a blue glowy, or at least as a disembodied voice. So Qui-Gon can appear quite easily in future Star Wars movies. He doesn't have to be a hologram or something, as Liam says here. And so anyway, interesting. Let's move on with some more Star Wars news. And this next piece relates to Star Wars Detours, which even among fairly hardened fans is something I find a lot of people don't know about. Now, if you rewind to 2012 and Star Wars Celebration 6, I think it was, there was an announcement of a new animated series for Star Wars, not in the vein of, you know, Clone Wars or Rebels. This was a comedy series put together by Seth Green and Matt Seinreich, two guys who have put together Robot Chicken Star Wars episodes in the past and so on. Very well known to Star Wars fans. In fact, when I was in the 501st Legion, we actually spent some time with Seth Green and Matt Seinreich, and there was a third guy as well. I just can't think of his name at the moment. And we did a group shot of all of us in our Star Wars costumes, and Seth and Matt were at the front. It was at a convention in Melbourne that we'd travelled down for. Good times. Seth is a massive Star Wars fan and a lovely guy. But anyway, I'm digressing and name-dropping, so let me get back to the story. Star Wars Detours was going to be this animated comedy series, got, you know, huge fanfare in 2012. In fact, there are videos out there on the net that people took at Celebration where they even played footage from it. There's a very famous one, actually, where you see an animated George Lucas on the screen, and he makes a crack about something being as horrible as the holiday special or something, and then the real George Lucas walks out onto the stage, the crowd goes nuts, he hugs Seth Green and Matt Seinreich and so on. And it was just going to be a very, very cool thing. But when Disney bought Star Wars, it got canned. It got lost in the mix. I mean, a few things got lost in the mix during that period, and a few things changed. I mean, you think of, I guess, Dark Horse losing the comics license, and with it going back to Marvel, and all sorts of stuff happened. And Star Wars Detours was kind of, you know, a statistic in this. But it's believed there are about 30 episodes already completed of this series. You see, it wasn't just an idea. It wasn't just something, oh, we're going to do this in the future. They had actually produced, I believe, around 30 episodes of this, and it just never went anywhere. It's believed these could be coming to a DVD and Blu-ray release sometime in the year ahead, which is very, very exciting. And in reports I've read, it's said that there are up to 60-something scripts that were never finished. So the show could have, you know, hit, I guess, 90-odd episodes fairly easily if it had gone into full production. All we have, though, is apparently about 30 episodes, which is still a lot. It's still more than a series in anyone's language of anything when it comes to television. And if we get them on DVD and Blu-ray later in the year, hey, fantastic, because Seth Green and Matt Seinreich's comedy is very funny. If you've ever seen their Star Wars Robot Chicken stuff, it's hilarious. I think this might have been a little more kid-friendly, and I don't mean in an overly kiddie way, but maybe just not as rude as the Robot Chicken Star Wars stuff can be. And look, I think, watch out for it, because I think it could be very cool. Wouldn't it be wonderful if enough people bought the DVD and Blu-ray, and somehow it could go into proper production? I guess with Disney having its own plans and, you know, not wanting to do it, that might seem a remote possibility, but you never know. At least we'll have something, apparently, later in the year. And also, speaking of DVD and Blu-ray, at least, when it comes to Blu-ray, there are still those rumours kicking around when it comes to the original trilogy of Star Wars without any of the special edition, extras, bonuses, enhancements. On shaky ground already. None of that stuff in it. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on all of that. Moving on, as you all know, there are standalone Star Wars movies being made, as well as the Episode 7, 8, and 9 movies as well. And it's not with sadness, I guess, because we don't really know much about the collaboration, but Gary Whitta had been collaborating with Godzilla's Gareth Edwards to be making one of these new standalone films. But Gary has now left the project, which is very sad. Gareth Edwards has put out a statement saying, "Gary has been a wonderful, inspired contributor. I enjoyed working with him tremendously. I'm grateful for all of his contributions." That's pretty standard stuff. And Whitta himself said, "The year I spent working with Lucasfilm on this Star Wars film has been by far the most rewarding period of my entire career. As a lifelong Star Wars fan, I'm deeply grateful to have had the rare opportunity to contribute to a new chapter in the ongoing cinematic legacy. The film is going to be amazing." Now, I always get confused when things like this happen. I mean, call me a simple man, But if you're a massive Star Wars fan and this is the most rewarding thing you've ever done, why are you not continuing with it? I think that's the question on my lips and probably any fan's lips who read something like this. It reminds you of when people are leaving a job, an executive, say, is leaving a job, and in their media release, if they're putting one out, or in some sort of email to the company, they'll say, "This is the best job I've ever had," and you know, all these great things, and you think, if it was all those things, why are you leaving? So, who knows why Gary Witter is leaving? Is it of his own choice? Is it not of his own choice? Did something happen? Did something not happen? Does he just want to move on? Who knows? I don't have answers to any of that. All I know is he says it's the greatest thing he's ever worked on and it's going to be an amazing movie, etc., etc. But he's leaving it. So, make of that what you will. Moving on, I saw a little piece in The Guardian online from a actor called Domhnall Gleeson. He's a young Irish actor. I've never heard of him, I've got to say, and that's okay. There's probably a lot of actors out there I've not heard of. It doesn't mean anything. However, Domhnall Gleeson apparently has a role in the new Star Wars films, and although he's talking to the Guardian about some other new film he's just made, the article tends to poke him a lot about Star Wars and, you know, asks, are you Luke Skywalker's son? Are you Boba Fett's son? Anything to do with Jar Jar Binks? You know, all these sorts of questions. And he can't really say anything. And although the article sort of suggests that he might be some sort of pivotal, interesting character in the movie, I'm not sure that he is. I've not heard his name attached to the project at all in the past. Being a young Irish actor and knowing that some of the filming was done in Ireland, it just might have been a convenience thing that they needed some Irish actors to be involved with those scenes shot in Ireland, and he's just been involved somehow. I mean, I guess it's not bad for your profile to get out there and say, yeah, I'm in the new Star Wars film, and before anyone sees it and realises that you're in it for like 2 minutes, you know, you're the Rick Olie, perhaps, of episode 7, I guess you can make hay while the sun shines and use it as a bit of a talking point in interviews. Again, I've not heard of Domhnall Gleeson involved before. I don't think he is one of the main three characters, obviously. We know who they are. And it will be interesting to see who he does play and how this does fit in and whether, as I'm surmising, it is involved with the scenes shot in Ireland. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see until the movie comes out. But yeah, there's some interesting stuff going out there with Domhnall Gleeson at the moment. Look him up on Google if you want to read more. We'll round out with some Doctor Who now. And the first of these stories is Russell T Davies mentioning that every year Stephen Moffat asks him to write a new episode of Doctor Who, and he politely declines. He says he likes sitting at home and watching it, but he doesn't really want to be involved with it anymore, it seems. And he also says he doesn't want to be involved in the upcoming 10th anniversary of New Who. And I've got to say, I agree with him on this. You know, I'm disappointed, on the other hand, that he doesn't want to write Doctor Who anymore, because I think he could churn out some interesting stories, and particularly more character-based stories than I think Stephen Moffat produces as showrunner. But this whole idea that we're having the 10th anniversary of Doctor Who simply because the show it didn't reboot in 2005, it sort of reignited in 2005, so 2015 is the 10th anniversary of that. But it's not really the 10th anniversary of Doctor Who. We recently had the 51st anniversary of Doctor Who, and this is Russell's point as well. You can't have the 51st anniversary of Doctor Who in November and then come back later in the year ahead and say, oh, well, now it's the 10th anniversary. I think that's just confusing. It gives people the wrong impression of Doctor Who. It makes them think it's a 10-year-old show when it's a 51-year-old show, etc., etc. So, on the one hand, I'm disappointed that he doesn't really want to be involved with the show anymore. On the other hand, I think he's spot on with not wanting to really amp up and celebrate this 10th anniversary, because it's not a 10th anniversary. It's just confusing. Yes, 10 years have passed since those days, but let's just move on and get on with it, which I think is his point completely. To round out, over on the Doctor Who TV website, they've got an article up which is 9 predictions for Doctor Who Series 9. See what they did there? Series 9, 9 predictions. Ha ha ha. Anyway, let's quickly run through them. I won't be actually reading the article, but I will touch on the comments made, because although a lot of this is fairly obvious stuff, it does, you know, raise some talking points. So, number 9, a classic villain returns. And they've got a picture there of Omega, which I think is quite cool. And I think, you know, yeah, a classic villain returning could be on the cards. We've had Sontarans come back in the Bond series. We've had Davros and the Daleks, obviously. We've had the Silurians. We've had Cybermen and Cybermats. We've had Ice Warriors. We've had Zygons. We've had the Great Intelligence. You know, we've had the Master in male and female form. So when you look back on what's been produced over the last decade in New Who, yeah, plenty of classic villains have returned. You know, the show's always been looking to the future, but it always has had little nods to the past as well. So I can't say whether it would be Omega, as they've put in the picture here, but I think a classic villain returning would be just fantastic. So yes, I think that's well on the cards. Number 8, an addition to the TARDIS team. Now, we know that Jenna Coleman is continuing in Series 9. I'm not particularly happy about that. I spoke about it at some length in the previous episode, so let's not go back over that territory. But you know what? It could be very cool if a new companion appears, and maybe a male companion, and not a male companion that is in love with Clara or is in love with the Doctor. Just a great male companion, just something different. I think if they have another female companion in there with Clara, the temptation will be to do the obvious thing and have Clara kind of possessive of the Doctor, like, I've known him longest, I'm best, you know, which is kind of the Clara attitude we've come to know, and, well, some people love it, I don't particularly. So I think a male in there who's not a love interest could be quite a nice balancing sort of thing for the TARDIS team, and something new and different, because one of my whole points, at least, about why I don't want to see Jenna Coleman back is not because she's a bad actor or anything like that, but because I like to see the Doctor bounce off different companions. I loved it when the Tennant Doctor bounced off Rose in his first series, he bounced off Martha in his second series, he bounced off Donna in his third series, and then he had a run of specials where he bounced off all different sort of companion of the week kind of companions. That was awesome. That's interesting. We see different sides to the Doctor when he bounces off different people. Having the same companion series after series, we saw it with Amy Pond, now we're starting to see it with Clara. I don't like it, you know. Some people out there do like it. They get very attached to the character, you know, whether it's Amy, whether it's Clara, and they just want to see that companion over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And that's okay, that's their point of view. But to me, anything had over and over and over and over again is a bore. You know, I can't think of anything more boring than if Clara was to somehow stay with Capaldi for all of his run. Ugh, yuck. Hopefully this is her last series, or hopefully she leaves halfway through the series or something like that. And it's not because I dislike Jenna Coleman. Let's get that really clear. I think she's great. I think she's a wonderful actress. I didn't particularly like where the Clara character went last series, but I do think the series ended with the perfect chance at Christmas time for her to be let free of the TARDIS team, as it were. But it just didn't happen. So we've got to make the best of that. Clara's back, but could a new companion help? I think it could. Number 7 in this list is a spoiler-free series, and what the author's getting at here is not having so many leaks or even official announcements on what's happening. Let the series be a bit more interesting and a bit of a mystery for people, and a bit of a surprise, because that's fun. And it mentions a lack of major spoilers regarding Last Christmas, which was the Christmas special, and even the second half of Series 8, as examples of how less spoilers can really enhance the experience for us as fans. And, you know, that's a nice point. Number 6, the Mistress will return to settle some unfinished business. Now, I think that's a no-brainer. To me, the Master, or the Mistress, wasn't killed last year. I said at the time, you know, the Master's way of disappearing and reappearing had a nice blue effect to it, whereas the cyber weapons had a red effect. When the Master was apparently killed, it was with a blue effect, not a red effect. I think the Master dematerialized or transmatted somewhere. You know, I think the Master will be back, and hopefully played by Michelle Gomez as the Missy incarnation of the Master. I think that would be really cool. And, you know, without the constraints, it's funny to use the word constraints when it comes to a two-part episode like last series finale, but I think in a good single episode, the Master could be very interesting and effective. Sometimes less is more, and writing a really tight Master story that plays out over, you know, 45 minutes could be just the ticket for that character. Number 5, this is a no-brainer, that fandom will once again go off its nut regarding ratings. And that's true. Doctor Who fans look at overnight ratings and, you know, if it's a little down or even sometimes a little up, they'll find some sort of negative spin on that. And the truth be told, once the week goes by and the BBC or whoever puts these things together, it's not the BBC, I'm sorry, once the people who put these things together consolidate how many watched overnight, how many watched on other devices at different times, and so on, how many might have watched a repeat performance, whatever, the ratings are pretty much the same as they've always been. So Doctor Who is one of the most popular programs on British television. It's strange when fandom gets so upset about ratings when the show is going great. And particularly on the world stage, it's a major money spinner for the BBC. So all these people who get concerned that the show's about to be cancelled, they're just so off the mark. It's unbelievable. Okay, moving on. Number 4, the past will be honoured. And this goes back to the whole 10th anniversary thing that I was talking about in that previous story with regard to Russell T. Davies. And the article says, while a 10th anniversary special may not be the correct path to follow, some recognition and honouring of 10 years of survival seems highly appropriate. You know, I don't even see it as survival, whoever wrote this article. I think it's been going along quite well, quite above a survival sort of level. But it goes on to say, be it a mini-episode, exclusive archival material, or even an abundance of in-universe references and character returns, we can be fairly sure such a joyous achievement will warrant some kind of celebration in the lineup for 2015. And, you know, in terms of, you know, little references in episodes or characters coming back, I think that's probably spot on. You know, I don't want to see a big thing made of it. I don't need to see a special episode. I don't even need to see a little mini episode, as they mention here. It might be fun to see some archival material, like some behind the scenes stuff that hasn't been seen before, if they put that up on the BBC website. Other than that, yeah, I'd just like to see maybe a character come back or some little references here and there. You know, a slight nod to, yes, it's been 10 years since we sort of regenerated the show, but that's all. Number 3, departures everywhere. And first up is obviously Jenna Coleman. This author thinks that Jenna Coleman's definitely leaving this series. I mean, most of us thought she was definitely leaving last series, so surely this is it. So we will see Jenna leave as Clara, whether it's halfway through or whether it's at the end of the series, who can tell. And also, this article speculates, could 2015 also be the end for Stephen Moffat? And it's true that Moffat's been writing for a long time. He's been writing since the show first came back, so he's been spending 10 years writing Doctor Who, obviously not as long as the showrunner, but as in terms of a contributor to it, it's been 10 years. That's a long time. You know, Moffat loves Doctor Who, but every showrunner, every writer has their time on the show and moves on. So, you know what? 2015 could be the year that Moffat does leave. And I guess the only thing that makes me pause and think, maybe not, is that Peter Capaldi certainly isn't leaving at the end of this series. He's kicked on to do his second. It's a no-brainer that he'll do at least a third, if not a fourth. And it makes you wonder whether, with the way Moffat seems to like, you know, writing in new doctors and casting new doctors and so on, whether he wouldn't, you know, not be able to resist the temptation to stick around and write out Capaldi and introduce the next doctor so that he has then, you know, created Matt Smith as the 10th doctor, Capaldi as the 11th doctor, and then go on to create another doctor. I think it's the kind of thing Moffat likes. I do think Moffat likes to write himself into Doctor Who history and lore. He does that with a lot of his stories, you know, and that's his right as a writer and a showrunner to make his mark on the show. I think it's wrong to say that he is wrong to do that. It's certainly something he likes to do, though. I think it's pretty obvious to all of us. And it makes me wonder whether he just wouldn't be able to resist that temptation to bring on a new doctor. But we shall see. We shall see. Number 2, a spiffing day for a spin-off, don't you think? And that regards, you know, the way in which in the past we've had Torchwood, we've had the Sarah Jane Adventures. Doctor Who spin-offs aren't anything new these days. Could we have a spin-off that perhaps has the Paternoster Gang, you know, Vastra, Jenny and Strax? Could we have a UNIT spin-off with Kate Stewart and the UNIT team? you know, possible, you know, cameos by the Doctor, maybe. Who knows? I've got to say one thing, though, and that's when the Paternoster gang were in the first Peter Capaldi episode, they almost felt out of date in it. I know that's a strange sort of thing to say, but they seemed like the right sort of gang to be around the Matt Smith Doctor, but around Capaldi it almost felt like that was a farewell to that team. I'm not sure we'll see the Paternoster gang again. And does that bode well for them having a spin-off series in the future? Well, it might. It might not bode well at all. In terms of UNIT and Kate Stewart, I think there's good possibilities there. I think, you know, UNIT is like a bigger Torchwood in some ways. And, you know, with Kate Stewart as a strong female lead, that could be a very interesting proposition for a TV series. Just depends on how it's treated, I guess. The author of this article does go on to say that if Clara leaves at the end of Series 9, could Jenna Coleman have her own spin-off? I just think that would be ridiculous. You know, for all the Clara fans out there that there are, I don't think any companion really can pull off a solo sort of series. At which point people say, what about the Sarah Jane Adventures? Yes, well, that was a long, long time after she was a companion and had a whole different sort of spin to it with having the kids in the series and, you know, being kid-friendly and all that sort of stuff. When Canine and Company was attempted, when Sarah Jane was a much more contemporary companion, it was a total flop. So, a Clara spin-off, please. Okay, the final piece in this feature is number one, The Quest for Gallifrey Nears Its End. And, you know, that's something I'd really like to see. When I was watching the anniversary special and you had Matt Smith talking to Tom Baker and, you know, he almost girlishly sort of said, I'm going to find Gallifrey. He was so excited. I really wish that had sort of played on. I wish Matt Smith had maybe continued as the Doctor for another year and we'd seen a bit of that play out. All we've seen thus far is the Capaldi Doctor thinking he might have been going to find Gallifrey and finding nothing and beating his hands down on the TARDIS console until it started sparking and blowing up. I mean, that was a little over the top, actually, now that I think of that scene, and a little silly. But that's all we've really seen of that quest for Gallifrey so far. It would be fantastic to have the Doctor find Gallifrey again. It would be fantastic to have Gallifrey return to its more traditional role as Guardians of Time. It would be fantastic to have the Doctor on the run again. No more of this mopey, I'm the last of my people, oh, I'm so sad about it. You know, I guess that's more of a David Tennant Doctor kind of thing. But you know what I mean. I would love to see the Time Lords out there as a real force in the universe, perhaps appearing not evil, but through the things they do, perhaps not sympathetic to the Doctor's own ends, thus putting them on a collision course and why the Doctor is and was in the past a fugitive and on the run. I'd love to see that again. At the moment, he's not on the run or a fugitive because Gallifrey's, well, originally it didn't exist and now it's out there, but we don't know where it is. So the Doctor's sort of, you know, not quite what he was in the earlier series, in the classic series at least. I'd like to see a return to that. I'd like to see a return to the Doctor on the run where the Time Lords are an actual threat to him. That would be very cool. So yes, let's see where this quest for Gallifrey goes in Series 9. All right, that's the end of that feature. Without any further ado, let's crack on. Let's tell you, in fact, about this AM audio competition that's coming up. I think you might want to be involved with this if you're a Doctor Who fan. Okay, everyone, this is the big one. This is the first time we at Who Wars have been able to do a competition, and it's with great pleasure that I can say the people at AM Audio Media, specifically AM Tamburo, the director and producer of Doctor Who Dark Journey, have put together three prize packs for us. These comprise of, well, for second and third prize, you get a Doctor Who Dark Journey postcard, posters, a TARDIS keyring, a Doctor Who Dark Journey audio CD, including a rare long cut of the Dark Journey theme song by Traffic Experiment. And then for the first prize, you get all of that stuff plus a TARDIS iPhone cover and an MP3 player loaded with Doctor Who Dark Journey episodes and exclusive extras. So, second and third prize is pretty cool, but the first prize is just amazing. Now, we're going to put a picture of this up on the website. You can see a picture of these prizes, and what we want you to do to have a chance at winning is have a think about Doctor Who mashups. Now, obviously, we here at Who Wars are a mashup of Star Wars and Doctor Who. That's created our podcast here. And Dark Journey was a mashup of Doctor Who and Sherlock Holmes. So what mashup would you like to see the AM Audio Media people take on, and why? Get on Twitter and tweet it and use the hashtag WhoMash. That's H-W-O-M-A-S-H, WhoMash. I've had a look on Twitter. No one uses that hashtag for anything else. That will enable us to see your entries and for the people at AM Audio Media to make a choice on who wins these great prizes. Now, I can't say anything more than that. Just get out there, get involved, put in some entries, use the hashtag WhoMash, and you could be winning a TARDIS iPhone cover, MP3 player with Dark Journey episodes, plus all this other great swag that comes from the AM Audio people and their Doctor Who Dark Journey series, which is really good and which we've reviewed in the past. And if you haven't already listened to it, you really should do yourself a favour and do so. Now, we'll run this competition again in the next episode, so you have plenty of time to enter. Get out there now, throw up some entries. If you think of some more, throw some more up. And we'll run this across these two fortnightly episodes ahead, and we'll see what happens. It's our first competition. I'm very, very excited. Are you? I hope so. Please get some entries in, and let's get some cool mashup ideas going.
Hello, Who Wars team. How's it going? I've got a question for you this week, so here it is. Which actor or actress who hasn't already played the Doctor would be your ultimate choice to portray the Doctor? So the reason I'm asking this is when I went to the Phoenix Comic Con Fan Fest last month, I went to the Paul McGann panel, and someone asked a similar question. He threw out the response, Tilda Swinton, so I thought that was a pretty good answer. She would be an excellent choice. But I think I'm going to have to go with Cillian Murphy. I've always liked him as an actor, and he's kind of just got that bizarre style about him. And he's got a really striking look. He always looks like he's playing a villain to me, even if he's not. So I think that would be kind of cool to see what he could do with the character of the Doctor. And then I think I'll also just throw out Johnny Depp, because Johnny Depp. So how about you guys?
Well, Kate, and most Doctor Who fans have an opinion on this question. Most would salivate to put their ideas across. However, I found it one of the most daunting and difficult questions ever. Now, this isn't to say I haven't been successful or keen to do this in the past. When Russell T. Davies' Casanova aired in 2005, I knew there and then that David Tennant, playing it as a confident, show-off, cheeky chappy, was a Doctor in waiting, and that he would play the next Doctor and would play exactly the same. And I said, he's the next Doctor to people. And to this day, they still say, oh, you were right, I remember you saying that. This was the only time I got it right. But it didn't stop me trying to guess things. When Stephen Moffat arrived, I was convinced that his at-the-time recently broadcast series Jekyll was a test piece to showcase his showrunning skills prior to the Doctor Who gig. I also thought he'd bring Jimmy Nisbet, the star of the show, and later the Hobbit films, along with him. Now, Nesbitt himself even commented at an awards ceremony that he was about to be announced as the 11th Doctor, and was putting a bet on it because it was such good odds, even though he'd never been offered the part. Anyway, because I'm so daunted by this, I decided to share Kate's task with my friend Fan in the Bath. Now, she's somewhere between a Watch for Enjoyment fan and a developing Uber fan, and I talked a lot to her about Doctor Who, and find her opinions very refreshing and very honest, and trust her very much. And strangely, she seemed much keener and more confident on the casting mission, and interestingly, she chose Jimmy Nesbitt as one of her choices, and indeed, a good choice. My next educated guess at the 11th Doctor, based on Moff's past, was one of the stars of his sitcom, Coupling, and that was Richard Coyle, who played the eccentric Jeff. He also showed his darker side in a BBC horror drama called Strange, showing out the range, which is very important to me as an actor. I like to see the range. I was wrong on that, but I would very much like to see him sometime as the Doctor. When I got the hang that it was possibly younger actors that were being favoured for the role of the Doctor in those early days of the new series, and that it was lesser known actors quite often, I thought of Daniel Kaluuya, who again has played both comedic and straight. So he's my next choice. Now, Than in the Bath was again demonstrating confidence by this point by now creating a full-on casting call list. We have Benedict Cumberbatch, Johnny Depp, and Liam Neeson all thrown in. Now, I'm not too sure about Benedict. I think he's a great Sherlock. But is he too famous in the role? Maybe I'm wrong. Johnny Depp, he's always been my choice for a movie doctor. So a good call, Than in the Bath. But while we're on the subject of US candidates, I'll have to throw in Robert Downey Jr., another great Sherlock, and a very diverse and good actor in the roles he's played, from Charlie Chaplin to Iron Man. Absolutely fantastic. Liam Neeson, another great choice, Than in the Bath. Between Taken, Star Wars and the Lego Movie, some great range is demonstrated to bring something to the Doctor. But look, Than in the Bath, we've fallen into that old trap. We're picking really famous people. So I come in with my next choice, Jerome Flynn. Jaw-dropping exclamations from Than in the Bath. Jerome Flynn? Really? So Jerome Flynn was a bit of a heartthrob in the 90s in a show called Soldier Soldier. It was so popular it led to Jerome and his co-star Robson Green having a bit of a crooning pop career and several number one records. Then he sort of vanished a bit until a couple of years ago when he turned up in Victorian cop drama Ripper Street and as Bronn in Game of Thrones. Now, as well as being what some would call buff, he also has a quirky Matt Smith thing going on, and he's got what the UK comedians Vic and Bob refer to as Georgiut. I guess I thought he might play it more like Christopher Eccleston. Well, perhaps Than in the Bath's right. Going straight back to celebs, though, my next shot is ex-Monty Python star Michael Palin.
He's proved himself in both comedy and drama.
And some very emotional stuff as demonstrated in recent horror drama Remember Me. Then Than in the Bath brought out the big guns with Hugh Quashie. Oh, I'd go with that big style. Certainly has the power the role needs and an inspirational suggestion. Former Doctor Who guest star Colin Morgan of Merlin fame was her next suggestion. Again, a great call, although I'd love him to play it in his natural Irish accent. Than in the Bath then cast Simon Pegg. Now, I worship the Peggster, but I had to say I didn't think he had the range to be the Doctor in New Who, but would have been great in the classic series, as would Alan Davies, I suggest. The thing is, you never know how an actor is going to play the Doctor until they appear on screen. A point in case is John Pertwee. John was famous as a comedy and character actor. He was most likely found playing over-the-top stuttering eccentrics or old codgers under a ton of wig and makeup. The producers of Doctor Who certainly thought it was this lighter side that John would bring to the character of the Doctor. But he didn't. He gave us a suave, stylish, focused dandy that we've never seen John play before. So, be it Benedict Cumberbatch, Jerome Flynn, or Simon Pegg, this is why I found the task daunting. Do I really have the right to assume what an actor could bring out of the bag to be the Doctor, old or new, and show what talents they've never been allowed to demonstrate?
Oh, okay then. Well, it looks like it's my turn to take a crack at the question. And, you know, historically, going back before Doctor Who came back in 2005, there were sometimes rumours that Alan Davis would be a potential Doctor. And, you know, Alan Davis had been in a program called Jonathan Creek. And some people used to say, and I used to agree with them actually, that in many ways Jonathan Creek was a bit like Doctor Who. He was earthbound, obviously, it was set on Earth, but as a magician, he was a bit of a deep thinker about mysteries and how to solve puzzles and things, and he dressed in an unorthodox kind of way, and obviously he's got his, you know, mop of curly hair, and he seemed very Doctor-like, and Verity Lambert, the original producer of Doctor Who, was involved with Jonathan Creek as well, which was another sort of link, and even the Jonathan Creek logo had a Doctor Who feel to it, and I used to think, yeah, wouldn't it be great if Alan Davis was Doctor Who? Now, Alan Davis obviously has a reputation also of being a comedian and so on. He's on every episode of QI. Fans in the UK might hear this and think, oh, God, no, he'd be the worst Doctor ever. But I think there was a lot to recommend him back in the day. Maybe not so much now. I don't really think he'd be a good Doctor now. but before the series returned, I used to quite like the idea of Alan Davis as a Doctor. But in terms of modern actors, I'd like to throw in, you know, the actor Samuel Barnett. Now, Samuel Barnett might be known to some of you for his work on the stage and film versions of The History Boys, very popular stage play. He was recently in a TV series on BBC called 2012, but I know Sam Barnett best from a TV series from 2009, I think, called Desperate Romantics, where he played the Pre-Raphaelite artist John Millay. And I think it was the way he looked in particular in that series. He had sort of the flowing locks and he was wearing a frock coat because that's the era the Pre-Raphaelites lived in. And it just gave me a very, I guess, a bit of a Paul McGann-ish kind of Doctor vibe to it, with the hair and the coat. And I thought, yeah, I can see this guy playing the Doctor. And I guess he was maybe a little too young. I mean, you can't say that anymore, with Matt Smith being obviously a young Doctor as well. But several years have passed since then, you know, gosh, more than I'd like to think, 5 going on 6 years since then. I think Sam Barnett's probably in his mid-30s by now, and if Capaldi didn't retire for another year or two, you know, he's even older, he's heading towards 40. I think he's got a kind of a vibe where, you know, the Paul McGann reference, even though I was referring more just to the look, I think he would be a more Paul McGann-ish kind of Doctor. I think he would have a bit of a Peter Davison air about him as well. If you can think of a Doctor somewhere between the Fifth Doctor and the Eighth Doctor, and in fact some people often say the Fifth Doctor and the Eighth Doctor are similar in some ways, I think Samuel Barnett might be a similar sort of Doctor to that. And, you know, that's appealing because the Fifth Doctor is my Doctor. So, yeah, I'd like to say Samuel Barnett as my potential pick for a Doctor. I also think he's not quite big name enough that he wouldn't be, you know, in with a shot for the part. And he's also not an unknown. I think he is an actor who people would know enough for it to continue in the tradition of Doctors being cast where they are known to some degree. I think the only one who really went against the grain there was Matt Smith, who had been in several TV series that people had actually watched, it's got to be said. But I guess in terms of overall recognition, he wasn't as high as, say, a Peter Capaldi was, or even a Christopher Eccleston, for that matter. So, I won't ramble. That's my thoughts. Samuel Barnett for me. How about you, Lex?
I chose Paul Bettany, because the 10th and the 11th Doctors both wanted to be a redhead. And hell yeah, I think a ginger for Doctor Who would be fantastic. So my number one choice is Paul Bettany. And really, look at all the other films that he's done. The Roommate and A Beautiful Mind, Dustfinger and Inkheart, Wimbledon. What else has he done? Knight's Tale, you know? He's done all these outspoken character roles already. That's an important trait of the Doctor. And he's got that eyebrow thing. He thinks real hard. I think he'd be great. So, Paul Bettany, please.
I bumped into one of my neighbours, Dave the Smurf, the day after Boxing Day. He's not actually a Smurf, but he does have one of Europe's largest collections of Smurf figures and memorabilia. Now, Dave's a Doctor Who fan and a sci-fi fan, but he likes to watch for sheer entertainment. He doesn't look at production notes or spoilers or casting news. He waits for it to come on the telly and he watches it. And it's for these reasons that I value Dave's opinion very much. So after our exchange over what our festive period had been like, we quickly moved on to chatting about the Doctor Who special. Dave quite surprised me, as he hadn't enjoyed it. He felt that Series 8 and the special was getting a bit same old, repeating themes and ideas and story beats of things that have been happening in the series over the last 10 years since it returned. He said he thinks it needs a new producer or new writers, some new ideas, fresh blood. Well, this got me thinking to Stephen Moffat's pre-series comments on how this new series, of which the special is part, would be very different. He said the production team can't keep doing what's tried and tested or the programme will die. It's going to be very different. Expect it to be different. Question is, was it different enough? Well, the other day, I purchased the Blu-ray of Spearhead from Space. Now, last time I watched this was about 20 years ago on a VHS copy, and I have to confess to not being that fussed by it. But the Blu-ray was £6, and I was interested to see the quality of the print. And I have to say, watching it completely blew me away. And I wondered how out of their comfort zones fans must have been at the time this was originally broadcast. This new earthbound colour story is so far removed from what people got to know Doctor Who as in the 60s era, they must have wondered if it was the same show. The scenes of the Brigadier interviewing Liz Shaw are extremely breathtaking. The shots of a long secret corridor in the background through the Briggs office door is more reminiscent of the modern unit bases. The Brig is a more stern, serious character than he would become, with a keen appreciation and open mind of alien threats. In later stories, I often wondered how he got the job. Liz is refreshing as the companion, a real new and brave direction, which would be reversed only a series later. This was a pilot episode setting up the new routine and regime for the series, and for the first time really treating the Doctor as an alien. It feels exciting. I think it sets a great tone for the future of the series. But things changed. Script editor Terence Dix was no lover of the earthbound confines and wanted to keep the series in space. The characters were toned down and became a little more light and humorous and, dare I say, cuddly as the series progressed. And the direction wasn't as slick as Spearhead's glossy, sleek Bond movie look. It became a TV production again. In a recent episode of Toby Haydock's wonderful Who's Round podcast, Mark Gatiss states that one thing the series does better now is have all of the production team and the creatives singing from the same hymn sheet. They have tone meetings and they have corporate people in there who are looking after the branding. And, you know, he says that this is one thing the old series didn't have, and that, you know, one story to the next could look like they were from completely different series. It was a complete lack of branding. But perhaps this is where there should be a happy medium reached. I, under no circumstances, want to join the ranks of forum users suggesting key team members should be replaced. But would a wider range of composers or effects experts be a bad thing? One only has to look at the series 8 episode Flatline to see how using a different CG team brought something a little different to the episode effects-wise. Yeah, overall branding control is good, giving us a good product, and having the same hymn sheet is good. But perhaps it's worth using a different hymn book every now and again.
Hello, Time Lords and Time Ladies. It's time for the Titan Comics 10th Doctor issue number 6 review. This one is called The Weeping Angels of Mons, and it was written by Robbie Morrison. The artist is Daniel Indro. You know, I have to say, I was kind of sad that it wasn't the same team as the last couple issues with Nick Abadzes and Elena Casagrande, but I'm sure we'll see more of them later. It's got the coolest cover. It's done by Tommy Lee Edwards, and it's got great composition, color, you know, the 10th Doctor just standing in the foreground looking cool as ever, with the Weeping Angels in the background and the World War I battle scene behind him. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then it's also got some cool variant covers. It's got a Weeping Angel with the barbed wire, and then it's got one with a silhouette of the TARDIS, an angel, a soldier, and a cross. But the main cover, that one's pretty awesome. You might want to go out and buy this issue just based on that alone. But the whole story's good too, but we'll get to more on that later. This is issue number 6, and it starts a new story. And so, basically, the characters, again, this is a 10th Doctor story, so we've got him. We've got the companion, Gabby. She is described as a would-be artist who showed courage and creativity in their last adventure. And then we've got the Weeping Angels in this one. And we've got various World War I soldiers. So this one takes place during World War I, and more specifically, during the Battle of Mons. So it's in Mons, Belgium. And this was the first battle between British and German forces. And it killed 1,500 people on both sides. And when I was doing a little bit of research on the history of this, what I found really fascinating was that there's this myth called the Angels of Mons. And it's about a group of angels who protected the British army. And so I thought that was a really clever play on words to call this story the Weeping Angels of Mons. And so it kind of raises that question, you know, are the angels doing these soldiers a favor by sending them back in time rather than just dying in the battlefield? So that's kind of an interesting twist to the whole Weeping Angels story. And I'm sure that will get explored more as the story unfolds. So basically, what happens is that the doctor and Gabby accidentally land right in the middle of the fighting. And the doctor gets knocked out, and so Gabby's trying to pull him to safety. But unfortunately, where she pulls him turns out to be the German trenches. And so the British forces end up thinking that they're spies. And then when they're in the medical facilities, there's this other guy in there, and he has bandages all over his eyes. And so Gabby takes the bandages off his eyes, and then you see kind of this horrifying image of this guy who has literally sewed his eyes open so that he avoids blinking. And then this issue ends where we see the angel appear, and it's to be continued. So what did I like about this story? Well, I felt like it had great writing. It made me interested in history, and it compelled me to do some more research. I mentioned on a previous podcast, I think, how I'm not really so much of a history buff. So in order to get me interested like that, it's got to be really good writing. So kudos to Robbie Morrison for that. And I thought it had a very poignant message about war, faith, and the suffering that we see because of all the fighting. There's this double page spread that really captures the devastation of war. And it just has a few different sentences across this whole double page. And I thought that was really cool. So I'm actually just going to read what it says on there because it was so good. So it says, "This must have been a beautiful country before the war. But all it is now, to me at least, is a wasteland of mud and blood haunted by the ghosts of the fallen. Whatever little faith I had is gone. I looked into the faces of friends dying a long way from home and see no promise of heaven, no life everlasting. I still believe in hell, though. Hell is real." So, wow. I was especially impressed with that. In this issue, we don't really see too much of the Doctor and Gabby, but since this is the first part, I'm guessing they're going to be featured more in the next issue or issues. Now, my main point of criticism for this is the artist's rendering of the 10th Doctor. I'm very picky about my 10th Doctors, and I just didn't feel like the likeness was very good there. Like in the previous issues, I thought it was there, it was solid, but not so much in this one. And I kind of feel bad for saying that, but it's honestly how I feel. So overall, I did really like this issue. And I thought it was really cool to see the Weeping Angels. And they are just as creepy in comic book form, in case you were wondering. I like the interesting twist on them, if maybe they're angels of mercy in this instance, if they're actually, if these men were going to die anyway, if they would be able to live out their lives longer, maybe it would be a good thing. And also, this issue did actually have a few funny moments. It did have some potty humor about this one soldier who was farting so loud that they thought it was gunfire, so it's kind of a reoccurring joke in this one. I thought it was pretty funny. So overall, I'm going to give this one 7.5 Sonic Screwdrivers out of 10. And this is to be continued. I'm not sure if this is a 2 or 3-parter, but the next issue is definitely a continuation of this story. So stay tuned. I think it'll be next month for my review of the 10th Doctor number 7. Until then, allons-y, and may the force be with you.
This is M.A. Timber reminding you that for free, full episodes of Doctor Who Dark Journey, news, cast info, and much more, visit us online at amaudiomedia.com.
Cool beans!
Alright, and that brings us to the end of the 21st Who Wars. My thanks to the Rev, Lex, and Kate for contributing to this episode, and of course, thanks to you for listening. Without you folks out there listening or entering our competitions or talking to us on Facebook or whatever it might be, the show just isn't as fun to do because we'd be talking into a vacuum. So thank you for listening. As always, if you're on iTunes, we would love you to go to our entry on iTunes and just leave a quick review and rating. It helps other people find us, which is kind of a key thing when you're putting out a show. And look, it doesn't even have to be a long thing, just a one-sentence review. You know, I like listening to Who Wars because... that's all it has to be. Anyway, I won't labour over the outro of this episode. We will be back later in January. We're on the fortnightly schedule now, and you'll be hearing from us again on the 25th. So until then, I remain Rob Irwin. Take care of yourselves out there. If you've got anything to say, write into us on Facebook, Twitter, or the website, whatever you like. Details are all at the end of the show now in the closing credits. Bye-bye.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.